Wait, that was this year? This year has gone on for an eternity. Truly an eternity.
It is so stunning to me.
It was just magical. It was a magical experience. I absolutely loved it.
I feel like I felt every song like radiate through my body.
That's what I'm saying, girl. That's what I'm saying.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Off to Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, we have reached the end of 2021, so it is time for our year in review.
What a year.
I feel like we said this last year, like, what a year, what a hard year, what a crazy year. But I don't think 2021 was less crazy or that much better.
It was interesting. It was interesting. The best way I feel about 2021 is that it was like, it felt like we were waiting the whole time, just waiting to get through like a holding period in limbo between the before and the after. And I think we're still going to 22, still going to be in that kind of waiting period.
Yeah. I mean, we'll talk a bit about it more later, but the end of 2021 is kind of shaping up to be March 2020 all over again. And it's totally not the way that we thought that we would end our year. I did listen to our year interview episode the other day from last year and how like hopeful we were to get back into theater, which we did this year. I do think I thought that we would see a little bit more, but I am thankful that we did get to get back into a theater, and the stuff that we saw was really good.
No complaints about what we did get to see.
Yeah.
Complaints about not enough, but absolutely nothing wrong with what we did get to see.
Yeah. So we have sort of like split up this year in review into different categories as we have the last couple of years. As I said on the last episode, we're heading into year three of our podcast, which is kind of crazy.
We finished up year three of our podcast.
Oh my God, you're right. We're heading into year four. Oh my God.
Yeah. Can you believe that? 3 years.
No.
We were doing some math before you hopped on, before everyone hopped on. So I'll share the math that my accounting brain did for us. In 2019, we recorded 27 episodes. That was our first year we were out. In 2020, we recorded 28 episodes. That was a banner year for us. And in 2021, including this episode, we'll have 25 episodes that we've released for a total of 79 plus one episodes.
Yes. This is technically our 80th recorded episode, which is such an accomplishment if you think about it. We don't count it as part of our episode numbers because that plus one episode was tragically the Broadway shutdown episode. But we have recorded in the last 2 years 47 episodes virtually, which is
more than
crazy.
We did in person.
I know. Oh my God, you're right. Now, like, thinking about that, doing the math for real, that's so insane to think. That being said, we are going to start off this episode by recapping the year of 2021. And we started off this year kicking it off with a Valentine's Day episode talking all about our favorite Broadway love songs. And one of my favorite moments of that episode was when you completely blindsided me with Our Love Is God on your list for your favorite love song.
It's very romantic. It's very romantic, okay? So it is the song Our Love Is God from Heathers.
Oh my God. I would have never put this
on
your
list.
It's
so good.
I know that you love it as a musical theater song, but I would have never even like put the two together. But I was just not expecting that one to show up.
We can start and finish.
We're what killed the dinosaurs. It's great. It's good stuff. And then obviously, as we have said, this entire year, 2021 was the year of the movie musical, and we didn't even attempt or try or schedule it properly for it to be this way. Obviously, we knew that everything was coming out, like West Side Story, Dear Evan Hansen, In the Heights. I mean, West Side Story was supposed to come out in 2020. It obviously got pushed because
of
the pandemic.
So was In the Heights.
Exactly. So we knew that there were a chunk of shows that were coming out towards the end of 2021, or movie musicals, I should say. However, we kind of like pigeonholed ourselves as a movie musical podcast, you know, episode 2 with The Greatest Showman, and then like a double watch of Mamma Mia. Like, we really went there.
I wrote down the ones that we, the movie musicals that we watched that didn't come out this year, and I'll list them for us. We talked about The Greatest Showman. We talked about Brandy Cinderella on Disney Plus. We talked about Mamma Mia 1 and 2. We talked about Across the Universe. We talked about Descendants 1, 2, and 3. And we talked about La La Land. So we...
Out of the 25 episodes we did this year, more than half were on movie musicals.
Mm-hmm. Which That's is not even including, like, you know, we talked about Legally Blonde, which was a pro
shot. Totally.
We talked about, we'll get to it, but another pro shot that I can't even invoke its name right now.
No, not yet. We're not there yet. Yeah. No, it's true. That's like so, it's so interesting. We didn't, again, plan for it to be this way. I think movie musicals was always on a list. We were going to do, I remember, do you remember when we first started the podcast? We were like, let's do an episode on movie musicals. And now thinking that however many we did this year, there was no way we could have just done one musical episode.
I think one day it'll be fun maybe to talk about it as a concept, or like what we think makes a successful like stage or stage to screen adaptation.
The flip side.
And the flip side, what would make a successful screen to stage adaptation. So maybe one day we'll get into that, but we've been going deep. We've been going hard on specific deep dives on movie musicals.
Yeah. Also, something fun this year was we got to see some in-person theater. We obviously started that off in the summer. We went to the Canadian, I guess, world. It was technically the world premiere, right? Of Blackout?
Oh, yes. The...
Yeah.
Of the full production, the kind of... They called it a preview production because I think mm-hmm. they're still hoping to do a full production in the theater. Mm-hmm. But this preview production of Blackout at the amphitheater at High Park with friend and past guest of the podcast, Brandon Antonio. I mean, I'm so happy because ever since 2 years ago we first saw Cygnus, we were just looking forward to seeing this full production of Blackout, and then to have it be one of the first things back to see and to get to see you in it again and to see so many talented people in it was like the absolute best.
Oh, thank you. It is like, it's so nice to be able to be on stage again and to do, you know, what we love. We all love to perform. That's why we, you know, we do what we do.
He was our first returnee guest on the podcast, also starring past guest of the podcast, Shalina Kennedy.
You're absolutely right. I totally forgot she was in that.
Is Broadway bound? And when we spoke to her in 2020, I think Paradise Square was like a whisper at that point.
Yeah, I don't even know. I don't know what Garth Drabinsky was cooking up at that time.
So that was like super interesting to see that had like come to light in 2021. Obviously had their run in Chicago. Now they're headed to Broadway. So a lot of fun stuff happening in that world. And then, yeah, so that experience at Blackout was great. Our first time back, not in a theater, but seeing theater live.
Before that, we'd gone to Stratford. Stratford was first.
Oh my God, I forgot it was before that. Wow. Stratford will show up a little later on my list of things.
Absolutely.
Because absolutely. That experience, I think, was one of my favorites of the entire year.
For sure, for sure.
Everything involved. Like, just going there, seeing what we saw. And I'm about to say you'll never forget like seeing live performance for the first time, even though I forgot that that was the first thing that we saw. But it feels like it was so long ago, which I guess it kind of was.
It really was. It was in July. So five months ago. We are back in the car on a road trip, terrace driving, for our first theatrical experience of the year. We're on our way to Stratford to see two of the cabarets that they're performing this season. Woo! So we cannot wait to see them and we cannot wait to cover them. It was like very exhilarating to be back watching live performance with people in front of you with an audience, a very socially distant audience, but with an audience.
Clapping.
And, you know, it was exciting. And so, yeah, it'll show up a little bit later when we talk about kind of more specific categories that we've come up with.
We thought that we would get back into a theater this year indoors, and we did, but it did take until the end of 2021 to do that. And we did go to Shawfest and saw Holiday Inn and A Christmas Carol. And we talked about this on a previous episode, but the health and safety measures, really great. And then not long ago, you know, we just went to Mirvish and we saw Come From Away. I saw Jesus Christ Superstar. Again, some of those will show up later in my list. But yeah, like really great. What we got to see indoors was really great. And all things minus Come From Away that we'd never seen before.
It's now so
thinking
true.
About it. Yeah.
It's so true. Yeah. New stuff. That doesn't always happen. We're always seeing things where we, you know, either know the music or have seen a production of it before or have listened to a cast recording, but very much Blackout, a brand new musical. You know, you hadn't seen this version of Jesus Christ Superstar before.
I haven't seen any. Like, that was my first in person.
Excuse me, we saw John Legend, and that was...
Yes, that was the definitive. Yes, you're
that
right.
That was the moment.
But yes.
You know, Holiday Inn was new to us.
Yeah, I'd never seen A Christmas Carol before, so new to me. Yeah, totally. Wow, good for us. Not trying to, we ended up seeing things that we've never seen before.
Those are, like, my favorite theater-going experiences, when you can be surprised or immersed in something new and exposed to something new where you're learning something.
Speaking of those performances, it is now time for us to enter into our categories, ranking some certain categories for the year, and we are kicking this off with performance of the year. I have three for this. I don't know what
I have three. It is a combination of things we saw in person and some taped performances,
same,
if you will. Why
don't you want to kick it off for us?
I'll start with my third ranked performance. So as you know, we got to see Come From Away last week. At this point, our episode came out last week. So my favorite performance that we saw in Come From Away, everyone, that whole cast was great. But a performance that stood out to me was the actor George Meswall, who played Claude and others. Basically, he plays the mayor and others. And the moment that stands out to me, and this is just like an emotional moment, but when we were in the theater and the mayor starts off the performance.
On an island.
Exactly. But like, he could not start because the audience was losing it.
Losing
we were
it.
Screaming, like, jump, like not jumping, but like standing ovation for the start of the show. Wow. Getting emosh. And he's the one who has to start the show. So everyone's looking out at us, but he's the one who has to start speaking.
Yeah.
And finally, I feel like he kind of just like moved his head a little bit and I was like, okay, we get to sit down. And to have like that control over the audience, and everyone knew what he was about to say, but he just like commanded the audience in that moment. And it's a moment I'll never forget. So his performance in Come From Away as Claude as others is my number three top ranked performance of the year.
I love it. My number three top ranked performance of the year, also a show I just saw. You heard me obsess over it on our last episode. But instead of picking one person, my number three for performance of the year is to the entire ensemble of Jesus Christ Superstar. Hardest working ensemble I have seen on stage this year, for sure, but also probably in the last couple years. I was saying to you, like, the size of the cast, when you compare it to Come From Away, which is like a 12-person show,
right,
is crazy. It's like double that. It seems triple that. But
They fill the stage.
They fill the stage. And, you know, like, Princess of Wales is a pretty big theater. I find that it has like a deep stage. And they did like sort of cover the deepness of the stage with set, but they still had people like everywhere. You know, the show starts with them running through the aisles, which I know you love, and just like everybody giving 110% the entire time. And whether it's because they've also waited so long to get back on a stage, everybody's like super energized right now, and like everything that's just going on in the world, to put on that hat for 90 minutes and give everything you have. Like, I am so thankful and appreciative to every ensembles and standbys and swings. Now, we love to stay away from controversy and scandals, but the Broadway League put out some harsh words I feel like it was an in-person interview that ended up written online. I will read a quote from the Broadway League president, Charlotte St. Martin. I will say this because I don't know what's going to happen at the time she's the president, but when this episode is released, unknown what could happen. So as we have said on this episode, there's been many cancellations due to breakthrough cases, COVID cases on Broadway. And they were talking about actors being out but keeping the shows running and how to do that. And obviously, as we know, the answer is swings and understudies and universal swings and standbys. And she had said that my educated guess is the newer shows maybe have understudies that aren't as efficient in delivering the role as the lead is. Some of the older shows have more experienced understudies and more experienced swings. This goes on. I'm not going to continue. I do think that it wasn't intended to be malicious. However, to even say that swings don't have as much experience as the leads is like the craziest statement I've ever heard. We've said this many episodes, the hardest working people in the theater industry, they have to memorize so many tracks and could go on with the snap of a finger. I was saying this to Steph before we got on here. There was an understudy at Moulin Rouge. He normally understudies the Duke, went on for Aaron Tveit the other night, has never performed the role. He went on cold. They put the jacket on him and was like, go. And that's how it happened. We've read stories of like people coming back 2 years later to fill into a role, like Kyle Dean Massey coming back into Wicked because he knew the track. Like, these people are amazing. She has since posted a statement like retracting. However, she did say she's not a theater maker, so she doesn't know. And I say, I think the president of the Broadway League should be someone that makes theater.
Probably. I mean, even before these COVID unprecedented times, swings, alternates, standbys, covers keep Broadway open. You mm-hmm. cannot have a show without them. And to devalue their work in any way is, it's very offensive to me, but to the work that they put in and to the machine that is putting on a Broadway show that is able to run, hopefully, 8 shows a week. And without them, they would not be able to do it. And it's not that they're not capable of doing it. It is because we are dealing with a pandemic that spreads so quickly throughout groups of people. Like, it's mm-hmm. just common sense that it will spread to these shows. Mm-hmm. And it's not because of the lack of ability of a standby or a cover or an alternate. It is just the world we're dealing with right now.
And also just that these words have been brought to light and, you know, people talking about understudy standby swings in general. For us as audience members, if you walk into a theater and there is a slip in your playbill, don't ask for your money back.
If you're about to see an understudy, especially in a lead role, you might be seeing a future star because this is where you get your experience. For a lot mm-hmm. of performers, you don't know what exciting young new performer you're going to be seeing in this part. And so, I don't know. I think it's, you know, there's disappointment that comes with it sometimes, but sometimes you're getting something even better than what you thought you were going to get. That's 100%. The moments where theater can surprise you.
Okay, your number two performance.
My number two performance. I feel like you're going to say this is low, but my number two performance is an actress who gave us everything this year.
I feel like it's the same as mine.
This is our queen, or maybe our people's princess, Gina DeWall, in Princess Diana the Musical.
I mean,
number two performance of the year. Almost too low, but I have a number
almost
one.
Almost too low, but my number one is number one. So it couldn't Same. Pass number one. But if we're talking about, like, maybe performance of the next 5 years, this yeah, is
of our the lives. Of our lives.
Can we get into Diana right now? I don't know if I'm ready to get into Diana right
okay,
now.
Okay, we'll get there. We'll get there later. But I just think we'll do a brief get into Diana and then we'll have our Diana section because we need to eulogize Diana this episode. Diana the Musical is crazy. Go back and listen to our episode on Diana. We really got into it.
Yeah.
But at the center of it is a performance that is grounding the show. That is pulling it together. The show would be complete trash. And some would say it is. The show would be... But... The show would be complete trash without her performance giving, like, a heart to the show. Without her Diana, this show would be nothing.
And not just her acting performance. Let's give it up for her vocal chops because, oh my Always. God. Oh Always. My God. Like, she is so... Someone tweeted the other day saying, give us Gina DeWall as Galinda and Elphaba. And then someone tweeted, which I think you would love, give us a sideshow with Gina DeWall and Casey Levy.
Oh, okay. I see the resemblance too. I see that. Yes. I see it. Okay. Yes. I mean, I'm always down to revive Sideshow, just like every 10 years. Just like a new cast run for
like clockwork.
Six
Once
weeks
it hits
again.
The like anniversary of the last time it closed, we're ready to reopen it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Not many people could pull off a line. That's what I get for marrying a Scorpio. And she did it every night.
Yes. You're number one then.
My number one performance is, so our first return to live theater was obviously at Stratfest, and we saw
a
show.
We have the same number.
No! We saw a show, a cabaret called Why We Tell the Story, and my performance of the year, number one performance of the year, is the entire cast, but I want to shout out Marcus Nance, because one, he curated the show, and two, because it was cabaret, each song was a different character. And the way he specifically, everyone, but he specifically would flip between completely different characters and give us amazing performance that had us at like 7 p.m. in a tent going crazy for vocals, for acting, for everything.
With a gorgeous sunset, let me add.
The sun was setting. There was a point it was setting right in my eyes. I'd take my sunglasses out. You know, the perils of outdoor theater. I was like, I can't see.
Yeah.
But yeah, my shout out to that entire cast, but specifically to Marcus Nance.
So mine is a cop-out because it's the entire cast of Why We Tell the Story. To just round it out, if no one heard our Stratford episode, it's Marcus Nance, Robert Marcus, Vanessa Sears, and Nima Bickersteth. And I mean, go listen to our full thoughts and feelings on that. I could insert soundbite after soundbite after soundbite of us freaking out over these performances in this episode. Floored. I have like
this is where
no
I started to
words.
Cry. This is where I started to tear up emotionally. It was a lot for me to hear that. I don't know why. I was just like, this song.
Hearing people sing that way when we hadn't heard live music or live anything since March that 2020. It was such an emotional experience. I feel like I felt every song like radiate through my body, and just the music
he
that they
lives
were singing,
in you.
Oh my God. He like I unfortunately it is not streaming anymore on Stratford's digital platform, Stratfest at Home. However, there is still amazing titles on Stratfest at Home that you can still purchase, still watch. One of the performances that we were obsessed with also this year, Robert Marcus's Up Close and Musical.
Wait, that was this year? This year has gone on for an eternity. Truly an eternity.
But I mean, like, you love that performance too.
Oh, it was amazing. I just remember you messaging me saying,
it was
you
like 7 p.m. We were like making dinner.
I was
and
doing
I
something.
Said, stop what you're doing and watch
you need
this.
To watch it. And I did. And I have never regretted it. And I watched all the other ones after it too. They were all really great. But the standout for me was Robert Marcus's. He has a voice like no one else.
Obsessed. But yeah, so Why We Tell the Story, such an amazing way to kick off this year. I feel like that really was the moment of, okay, the industry is going to be okay. Like everything's going to be fine. I mean, I could talk about every performance. Vanessa Sears singing I'm Here. Like, come on. Her voice was crazy that
night.
She gave. Robert Marcus and Vanessa Sears singing Aida. Like,
they gave.
Everything about it. It was such an amazing experience and obviously number one on both of our lists for performance of the year. Yeah. So let's move on to our favorite new cast recording. Last year, this category was in here because I feel like we had turned to cast recordings because there was literally nothing else.
And I feel like there were a bit more last year that came out versus this year.
Yes. For me, and I feel like you were a bit of the same way, I had a hard time listening to cast recordings this year.
Yeah.
And I don't know
why.
Disagree.
No, I mean, one I listened to a lot. This year it's not a new one, but I listened to American Psycho a lot because of
like
The Love of My Life, Jonathan Bailey. No, but I feel like, obviously, we talked about Bridgerton so much this year, and I think this will come up, but Jonathan Bailey. I was like, I want to hear you sing. So I listened to, I love American Psycho, but I really listened to it a lot this year because of him.
American Psycho got a lot of airtime this year as well. I just
it did. Other cast recordings I listened to this year that weren't necessarily like new. I listened to, for the first time, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, which was really great. That was a, I listened to that because I listened to the original cast podcast and did an episode on it with our friend Patrick.
Obsession. No, you had an obsession?
Yes, I did. Yeah. And so because I listened to that podcast episode, again, shout out to the original cast with Patrick Flynn, who we love. I was like, I need to listen to this cast recording. Norbert Leo Butz is great. Sheree Renee Scott, amazing. No complaints. So that was kind of like a new one that I discovered this year, but not new. Mm-hmm. I'll start with an honorable mention I have because it's not a cast recording and I've talked about it before this year, but the album that Ellery Ward put down of folk Sondheim songs called A Perfect Little Death is really great. It's like really, really great. Her Being Alive, you know, one of my favorites, and then kind of this like really extra melancholy soft version of the song, it's beautiful. So that's my honorable mention. Not a cast recording, but a great recording of these amazing songs that has even like more meaning now that Sondheim isn't with us anymore.
Yeah, I have an honorable mention that is breaking the rules because I haven't listened to it yet, but I think it needs to be announced. Carolina Change, everybody, has a new cast recording.
Wow, can't wait. So something we discovered this year is that the original Carolina Change cast album is not available in Canada. So this one better be. This one better be available in Canada.
Should we confirm live on air? I think we should confirm. I'm pretty confident it is. It literally came out at time of episode release like 2 days ago.
Fine. Go to Spotify. See if we can listen to it.
It is on Apple Music.
Oh, it's on Apple Music. Okay, I'm checking Spotify.
Which means I'm sure it's on Spotify. But,
I'm sure it is. But we can't trust.
I know. It's an honorable mention because I have not listened to it yet, but it is a cast recording that I will bring with me into 2022. I cannot wait to listen to a cast recording from the show because, as we said, last time we saw this was early 2020. So I remember some of the songs, but I don't remember a lot of the songs. And the cast that's on there, really good. So I'm excited to listen to that before we head into like award season next year, because award season is actually going to happen. So it will be exciting to hear those songs finally on a well-mastered recording. So I'm excited for that.
Here it is on Spotify, confirmed. Canada, we're blessed right now with Carolina Change finally.
Yeah. Okay, your number... Do you have a number three? Yeah?
I do have a number three. Where did I put it? My number three... I think there's kind of three that I listened to it all this year. But I'm going to go with the Unauthorized Bridgerton cast album as my number three.
I'm going to, again, break the rules here. It's my number one for this
year. Yeah. Number one!
Yeah.
Wow.
We've talked about it on many episodes. This is such a great cast recording, and if you can believe, we talked about it as early as episode 2 this year on the Greatest Showman episode.
Yes,
that was the first time that I heard I Burn for You.
It was just on TikTok. I think one of the greatest things about this album is that Abigail Barlow is playing every single part.
Yes.
And the way she modulates her voice so that you know who's singing, and she does a different performance for every character.
She has a stunning voice.
She does duets with herself. So good.
Also, shout out to Emily Bear for those orchestrations, because damn, that for cast recording, I mean, it's not a cast recording, it's an unofficial Bridgerton album, but the way that it's orchestrated is up there. It's so beautiful. Good, so stunning. It's like, oh my God, I'm obsessed with it. I loved it. That's why it's my number one. But I guess I'll go to my number three then.
It is
a new musical that I actually watched this year, one of the only virtual musicals that I saw, and it is called Breathe by Jodi Picoult, or Jodi Picoult, whatever you say. I have said Picoult my entire life, so I don't know what it actually is. But it starred so many people: Matt Doyle, Max Clayton, Kelly O'Hara, Colin Donnell, Patty Murin, like so many people were in it. I watched the show virtually, and then they released a cast recording, and it is available on all streaming platforms. It is such good music. One of the guys from the Ratatouille musical worked on it, which is really great. And I just think the vocal performances on this cast recording are really, really good. I don't think the show is ever going to end up anywhere. I think it was literally created for a virtual setting because it's about the pandemic. But, you know, star power and really good music, put those two together and you kind of have a winning piece. So I loved it this year and still listen to it to the day.
I haven't had a chance to listen to that yet, so I'll have to put it on my list, put it on my next up to listen to.
After Carolina Change.
After Carolina Change, obviously. Okay, yes. I'm going to go into my number two. So my number two is Diana the Musical.
Same!
There's nothing like it. There's just nothing like this musical.
Okay, but like, in all seriousness... This show, I think we're here. I think we're at the moment.
Yeah, let's do it. Number one's going to be so anticlimactic after this, but let's go into Diana.
Yeah. This show, when we first watched it together virtually, I will never forget us like thinking about how insane these lyrics are. And I still think that these lyrics are insane. However, this cast recording slaps. It's so good.
It's good. It's good. It is.
Whatever his name is from Bon Jovi did that.
David Bryan did that. The other guy did that. I don't even know their names anymore. Sorry.
Sorry to Bon Jovi.
I don't want to call it the perfect musical, but it kind of like amalgamates every other musical into this one musical. Like, the best way I heard to describe it is someone who has never seen a musical, this is what they think musicals are. And, like if you were to, if you're like, there's a musical about Princess Diana, someone who has never seen or heard of a musical and just hates musicals, they would picture this. Like, they would picture this. And
some
people might think that as an insult, but to me it is a compliment. To me it is.
Agree.
It's the form of musical, and they just, like, stuck right to it and they nailed it.
It is camp at the highest degree of camp. Everybody on stage knows that, which I think is the most important part. And I will say, I am not a critic, obviously, but the critics needed to calm down on this show. It was not high class art. It was camp and it was fun and it was entertaining. And if you walked in there and you saw the amazing like rose backdrop and you saw the merch and you saw the poster itself and you're like, I'm going to watch a serious musical on Diana, that's on you.
absolutely. I mean, again, we are not critics, we are lovers, appreciators of theater, but again, not critics, which I think is a difference. But I think you need to sometimes like take things for what they are.
Yeah.
As a critic, you know, you can't hold every piece of art to the exact same standards because where they're coming from is not the same place.
No.
They are intending to do different things. And again, like you said, like Diana was not intending to be a serious musical. It's a musical comedy.
Yeah.
It's more comedy than it is musical. I would classify it as a musical comedy, even though it has a obviously tragic ending, but it's a musical comedy.
I'm sorry. A man comes out of the ground at the beginning of Act Two on a bull, and you were taking this
James Hewitt did that. It's like, you have to like meet it where it's at. You can't expect everything to meet you where you are. You have to come to things with an open heart. And I feel like critics with this didn't do that. And I think for a lot of things don't do that. They're not willing to appreciate the art for what it is and what it's intending to do. So
I will say the joy, the theater Twitter joy that this show brought, it kind of like built a little community online, which was so amazing. I don't know the last time a show has done that, where people have just like connected on a level that didn't seem possible. I mean, just to shout out some of our faves, like Casey Mink, like go follow her.
Casey Mink, she was his number one supporter.
Like we've talked about him a million times. Ryan Bloomquist, Lewis Peitzman, like... Ayanna Pressco, like so many people found so much joy through Diana. Anyway, to bring it back to performances, this is a great cast recording. Everybody sounds stellar on it. And the one thing I will say, again, as we said, the show tragically closed. It did get its opening night. I'm sure they had an amazing opening night party. But I think there's something nice in the fact, considering what's going on currently on Broadway, that they did not get shut down due to COVID. They did get to finish their run and go out with a bang.
The way I was absolutely so worried.
All of us.
Because a lot of shows were like closing for the night, closing for the night. I'm like, Diana, it just needs to get through like four more days. They just need to get through four more days.
Shout out to whoever is running Diana's official Twitter account. Yeah.
Because they also understood. They understood what we were doing.
Yeah, and they had tweeted every day last weekend saying, no positive cases here, we're on tonight. It was just like, it was so uplifting. It gave me so much joy.
Here's a tweet from Natalie Walker. Every second of Diana the Musical enthralled me, and I will be going to the closing in costume. Here's a tweet from Diep Tran at Deep Thought. My favorite person tonight is the person at Diana the Musical who yelled F off at Prince Charles after he angry sang at Diana. My hope for the show is it reaches Rocky Horror level of call and response. I would scream. I would absolutely scream if that happened.
Everything about it. I love it so much. I'll never be over it. I'm just sad that we never got to see it live.
No, I know. It didn't run long enough. We're in Canada. We're stuck up here. We can't leave.
Oh, maybe your dream of Diana at the Princess of Wales here will happen one day.
We can only hope. We can only hope. Okay, to my number one.
And that's been our discussion on Diana. Thank you for coming to our TED Talk.
Oh, man. My number one is my favorite new cast recording of the year was Ride the Cyclone. I talked about it in a previous episode. I just thought it was really cool. You know, this is my indie high art pick, but I listened to it and I'm like, this is a cool cast recording. They were doing something cool with this show and cool with this cast recording. I like the vibes. I really liked it. And it's one that I like forget about and then I'll go back to it and be like, oh, I remember this. This is a good one. And I hope like more productions of the show get to happen. I hope it gets licensed because it's a small cast. It's pretty like simple staging. So I can see regional productions of the show going forward and I would hope to see it live one day soon.
A cast recording I have not listened to, but I will bring it with me after I listen to Carolina Change.
Exactly. Carolina Change, then the one everything we didn't else listen to.
Yes, exactly. Okay, well, my number one was Bridgerton, so I guess we're moving on to our next category, which is social media moment of the year. There is one that is, like, serious that I will get out of the way first because it's actually, like, lovely. As mentioned, and we've said this on a podcast episode, you know, Stephen Sondheim sadly passed away not that long ago, and the Broadway community got together in Times Square to sing Sunday. And I think this moment,
organized by Eric Bergen,
who was, if you remember listening to our year in review last year, I'm pretty sure he was like, was he performance of the year? We might have given him a performance of the year because I think it was deserved. I think he was an honorable mention performance of the year.
He got something because he kind of was the executive producer of that early pandemic. He was coordinating people, IT support for like Rosie's Broadway special. I can't remember what it was called. Yeah. Just like, it's like, Eric, I'm calling you.
But the way that Eric Bergen like put together this entire performance while simultaneously being Dr. Pomander and Waitress, a man of many talents.
It's odd. He's not someone, when I think of Broadway, he's not the first person I think of. No. But it seems that he is, you know, really loves the community and he loves Broadway and theater and is the first one, it seems, to want to put together these special things and special moments. And it seems like he has contacts or he uses his contacts for good. Yeah. I really appreciate Eric Bergen and what he did to organize so many things, but specifically this Sunday sing-along that was extremely moving.
It was just like one of the loveliest things to come out of 2021 was to watch everybody like pour their hearts out and sing a song that some of them like didn't know the lyrics to because they had sheet music in front of them. But just to like come together as a community right before like everything got really bad again, just to sing for Sondheim. It was amazing. So that is my like not funny social media moment of the year, but still a really great one. Okay, our social media moment of the year came to us on the night of the Tony Awards. We haven't even discussed the Tony Awards on any episode because I feel like last year when we did a nominations episode, we were then in limbo for so long because there was no announcements of anything. The only announcement that we got was that the Tonys would like to air in conjunction with Broadway reopening. And then we were like, but when is Broadway reopening? Like, how are we doing this? Anyway, we got it in September. Congrats to Aaron Tveit for winning unopposed. He did actually give a really lovely speech. Moulin Rouge won Best Musical this year. Sadly, Jagged had 15 nominations this year, and they just announced that they are closing, or they closed on Broadway. Their last performance was on December 17th.
And they didn't even know it was their last performance because it was before a COVID closure.
Catherine Gallagher had a premonition that it was going to happen, and she performed like it was her last performance. Congrats, Catherine, for doing that. But I will say, we are not going to get into this. Whatever your thoughts may be on Jagged Little Pill and the storyline and the characters and whatever it might be.
I mean, our thoughts are out here for everyone to hear if they want, but...
Yes. We didn't get, like, too into it. There's obviously been so many developments in 2021. You know, there's been statements put out by the show. Rewrites potentially were in the works. All that aside, put your thoughts and feelings aside, so many people just lost their job in the middle of a pandemic, and... Mm-hmm. It's something that we should all sympathize with, no matter our thoughts on the show. But, I mean, we've said this on so many episodes. I love that cast recording. It is, like, one of my favorite cast recordings to come out on a musical in the last, like, 5 years. So, to see a show have that many nominations, no, they obviously didn't win 15, but to close because of the pandemic and breakthrough COVID cases is pretty devastating. And... I know a lot of people are like, this is the reality of what's to come, and I hope that it's not that way. And I will say on this podcast, I hope it goes on tour, and I hope it comes to Canada, because it belongs here.
I think that would be a great tour. And, you know, of course, Canada, we need Alanis's music in a Broadway musical. We need it here. So
that's our little spiel on Jagged, but back to the Tony Awards and the greatest social media moment of the year. So... We're setting the scene. It is like, what did they do? They went back in time to give us like the best duets, right?
That's they brought iconic duos out. So did it start with Adina and Kristen? That was our first.
Then it went to Anthony Rapp and Anna Pascal. And then
What You Own.
Yeah. And then it closed it out with Audra and Stokes for Ragtime, which if anyone remembers, in the early days of 2020, there was supposed to be a Ragtime reunion concert for the Actors Fund, I believe. It was one of those like high like paying events that the money went to charity. And my friend Alex was supposed to go and see it. She like was about to buy tickets. It was high profile. Everyone wanted to go to that. Anyway, we were on Twitter, as we always are during award shows, and... Max Crumb did that. Now, for anyone listening, this might not be funny, but it is the funniest thing that ever happened to me this year.
I feel like this whole episode is just like, this is not for anyone else. This is for us.
Welcome to our year in review.
Excuse me. This is what brought us joy and us laughter this year.
Yeah, exactly.
And this was the number one thing. And it is something we have quoted
every day since.
I cannot find this tweet right now, but I will find it by the time the episode comes out. Basically, Max Crumb, who, as we know, won Grease, You're the One That I Want, many, many years ago, along with Laura Osnes, and played Danny in Grease on Broadway. And so they tweeted on the night of the Tony Awards, as these iconic duos are coming out to sing their iconic songs.
It makes me laugh every time.
Again, this is for us only, for us. They tweeted something to the effect of, imagine me and Laura coming out to sing You're the One That I Want right now. And Louis Peitzman, our fave,
yeah, truly,
responded saying, not this. And every day since, to each other, we've just been, not this.
Something goes wrong. Something doesn't even need to go wrong, but if something goes wrong, something
in the slightest,
like, bad in the news, like, Diana closing, not this. Not like, this. There are so many things, not this is just so relatable in general. I was crying. We were reading so many tweets, and then this just popped out.
We'd also been really forced to, like, watch an hour of Big Brother, if you remember.
We, in Canada, did not get the Tony Awards, if anyone remembers that either. I think Michael Rubinoff tweeted about this, saying that Canada did not get a stream of the Tony Awards, so all of us, like, downloading our VPN extensions to try and watch the actual awards ceremony. I have a note for the Tony Awards as well, next year, when it actually happens. Can we please have the awards and performances back together, because the performances break up the speeches and it's really necessary. Thank you. But this year it was like speeches and awards and then performances. And the performances were airing on CBS. And in Canada, because there was football on earlier that day, Big Brother got pushed and we had to sit through an hour of Big Brother before we got to the performances. And it was tragic.
It was rough. I also hate to break it to you. I think this tweet has been deleted.
It lives in my heart forever.
So. It lives in our hearts. You can delete it, Max, but we will never forget. We will never forget.
I believe we have made it to the movie musical.
Finally. An hour later.
We haven't even given our favorite moments of the year, but it's fine. We will go to our movie musical showdown of this year. As we've said on so many episodes this year, including this one, this was the year of the movie musical, the year of the animated movie musical. We are not talking about those, but it definitely was the year of the pro shot. We got so many things. I feel like 2020 we got so many things too, because thinking back, like, Hamilton was released on Disney Plus. Yeah. We got the prom last year. Like, there was so much that has come out in the last 2 years, which, thank God, because, like, it kind of saved us for our lack of musicals in this time. But we have watched 6 brand new movie musicals this year, and we are about to give our definitive ranking. It is the overall ranking that we are doing first of these 6 movie musicals. This is not in the order. This is in no particular order. The order that I'm giving right now is by release. So the most recent, West Side Story. We also got Tick, Tick, Boom this year. Everybody's talking about Jamie, Cinderella, Dear Evan Hansen, and I believe this year kicked it off in the summer with In the Heights.
I believe that is the release order. 2 we didn't see. We didn't see Cyrano, and we haven't seen Annette.
And we also haven't seen the 2 animated, which is Vivo and Encanto, both Lin-Manuel Miranda projects. Only one Lin project.
There are many Lin-Manuel Miranda projects.
There were 4 Lin-Manuel Miranda projects.
Many Lin-Manuel Miranda projects.
Yeah.
Involved in this year.
We did talk about that quite a bit on our In the Heights episode of how are we in the golden age of Lin-Manuel Miranda movie musicals? And I think we are. And I honestly hope we continue to be. So it's been like such a good year for the movie musical. And here we are to give our full and final ranking.
This is a tough one. It's not. The worst one of these 6 was Cinderella. It was garbage.
But also, it wasn't great.
It was great. It was great. It had some things going for it, but not much. It was fun. I had a good time watching. I watched with my family. Rhythm Nation happened. It was fun, but it had no redeeming qualities really, and I will never watch it again.
It's also my number 6 for all of those reasons. Although I feel like I might watch it again.
I will never watch it again.
I don't know that I would put it on, but if it was on TV, I would leave
sure.
it.
Sure, but it's on Amazon Prime, so you'd have to click on
it's
it.
It's a commitment. You're right.
You okay. have to click.
Number 5.
This is hard because I really was hoping for the best with this, and yet we got this.
What we got.
So my number 5 is Dear Evan Hansen.
Me too.
Really wanted more, mm-hmm. and I didn't get it.
For all of these movie musicals minus Cinderella, we have a corresponding episode and West Side Story. We did not do a West Side Story episode. If you want to hear how we felt about all of these in depth. Go listen to all of those episodes. Totally agree. I feel like we were let down by Dear Evan Hansen this year. And I expected so much more.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, number four. This is hard because it's another one that I actually think is good, but it just was not as great as I wanted it to be. So my number four is In the Heights.
Me too. I forgot this movie came out this year. That's how...
It's been a long year. It's been a long year.
But I also feel like that's how unmemorable it was to
me. It was a little bit unmemorable. Yes, there are magical, amazing moments of this. Like, shout out to Alice Brooks because...
Yeah.
The cinematography, amazing choreography, fantastic.
It's about 45 minutes too long.
Yes, it's too long. It does drag, the second half particularly. And it's just kind of missing for me anyway, and I don't think this is true for everyone, but for me, it's just missing a little bit of like sparkle, you know? Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. It's just though that something extra that makes kind of like the top movies on this list, the top, In the Heights does not have that for me.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think we got some great performances, some great acting. Anthony Ramos, really good in this movie. But overall, I think I also was expecting more. Again, something that we talked about in our In the Heights episode, you know, a lot of cut songs. So anyone that was like a super fan of the musical, not...
Sunrise, where you at, Sunrise?
Not probably the adaptation that they were hoping for. But yeah, there was just like a little bit of magic missing for me in this movie.
I mean, while we're talking about In the Heights, this was directed by John Chu, who is directing an upcoming movie musical, a long anticipated one. It finally has a cast.
Well, Wicked. It's got a two-person cast.
Things are happening. You know, the things are happening with this movie. I feel like we've been talking about Wicked for years, the Wicked movie for years, and now things are happening with it. And we have our Glinda and our Elphaba. So it's, something's coming.
I'm not going to give a full thoughts on this. As we know, Wicked means a lot to me.
Yeah.
I don't like this casting. I love Cynthia Erivo. I love Ariana Grande.
Yes, I love both these people individually as well.
But not in this.
I think this casting is telling me that this is a different movie than what I thought it was going to be.
Yes, 100%. And I think that we had such high expectations for this cast because of the unknowns of In the Heights. I was really hoping for. And I know that In the Heights did not do well at the box office. Neither did West Side Story. But... I do think that in a non-pandemic year, without a big star cast, Wicked is a household name at this point, and I don't think that they needed a pop star.
It's more of a household name than In the Heights, for sure.
Yeah. I think a lot of people disagree with us. We got some fun comments on our TikTok.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Fighting with people in the comments is actually just horrible and I will never do it again. We didn't even fight with people. We just
trying to like stand up for ourselves.
I just don't get the vibe that Glinda's a mature student. I don't. I know that university students can be old. I am one. I understand.
That was my favorite comment ever. But
I just don't think Glinda's a mature student.
Someone had comment because I had commented on someone's video saying that I have a hard time believing the age, and the hardest time I have believing the age is the age between Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande is really where it's at. That's the hardest time I have. You know, Cynthia's in her 30s, Ariana almost 30, and I just don't see them as university students. I agree that Elphaba is a more mature student than Glinda, but 100% you're right. Glinda's not a mature student, guys. She is straight out of high school. She never even went to high school. She skipped straight to university. She is not mature.
No, but everyone at the comments being like, I have someone in my university class that's 27. Congratulations. I understand. I went to university too. That's not what we're talking about here.
Again, I think we are about to be blessed with the best movie soundtrack of all time.
It's going
to
sound amazing. They're going to sound amazing. I hope, like, I think Ariana, like, both of them, but I think Ariana probably is, like, working with a vocal coach to get that, like, soprano, operatic sounds, get that enunciation, Ariana.
And our campaign for Isaac Paolo's Fiero is still on, so.
Yeah, it's happening. We're doing it.
Yeah. Okay, number three. We have the same number three, too. It's really just our two and one that is
a
toss-up.
Number three, this was, I thought, a great adaptation of a good musical. Everybody's talking about Jamie. They took a good musical that I like enjoyed so much seeing on stage, and they adapted it so well.
Yes.
To a movie. And again, this is, it's not the greatest musical you'll ever see, and it's not the greatest movie you'll ever see, but in terms of adaptation, like, to a T, perfect. And in terms of my enjoyment, had a wonderful time watching this movie.
Yeah, I obviously can't speak on the adaptation because I never saw the... Well, I guess I can because we saw
the film version
filmed at Cineplex. So I agree with that. I also think here was a perfect example, sorry again to Dear Evan Hansen, but casting someone that was the correct age for the role.
Yeah.
And all of those scenes in the high school felt so youthful.
Yes.
And... In what you said just about In the Heights, like, Jamie felt sparkly to me, and In the Heights didn't.
Yes, it had the right tone. It captured the correct tone of the musical. And I loved the transitions from, like, real life to Jamie's dream sequences when you're entering Jamie's head and seeing what he's picturing his world as. I thought this movie had sparkle.
Yeah, totally. So I definitely agree. Okay, here we are at our number 2 and 1. I think we are different here, but maybe you'll...
Yeah, I think we probably have a different 2 and 1 just for various reasons. So I'll start with my number 2. This was actually so hard, but my number 2 is Tick, Tick, Boom.
I mean, I knew immediately, as soon as you saw West Side Story, I knew that it was your favorite movie musical of the year. I am not the same. But give us your thoughts first.
Tick, Tick, Boom was like magical, magical, magical movie. I want to see everything Lin-Manuel Miranda directs again. And I also think this, like, I don't think you can talk about Tick, Tick, Boom without talking about Lin-Manuel Miranda, because I think we've seen, you know, his major art. Hamilton is about a writer who's like trying to build himself up, who's trying to pull himself from not a bad situation, but from, he's trying to pull himself up to a place of grandeur. Some, like, In the Heights even is about, not about a writer, but about someone who is trying to find something better for himself, who is trying to pull himself forward. And Tick, Tick, Boom, Jonathan Larson is a character, was a person who at the time of this musical takes place, was trying to pull himself up. And so I think, like, Lin-Manuel, these underdog stories of people who are creating, who are working hard, I think that's, like, his wheelhouse of, like, the perfect thing for him to adapt and to direct and to be at the helm of. And I think Tick, Tick, Boom just was a wonderful adaptation. And something like where we talked about Jamie, I think, was, like, a very, like, to the T adaptation. This took the structure of Tick, Tick, Boom that had been kind of pieced together from what Jonathan did and from what the book writer did, whose name I'm forgetting, to put it into a 3-person show, and, like, built upon it so much and, like, made it cinematic. And the music is so good, and the performances in it are so good. And it's just, it's wonderful. It's magical. I love this movie. I will watch it again and again. I have watched it again.
Yeah. I will save my thoughts. It's my number 1, but my number 2 is West Side Story. And I just think, like, a blanket statement, because this has been, again, referenced on many podcast episodes this year. This was not a movie that we were excited for.
No,
both of us were not excited to see this movie. And I will put the Ansel Elgort allegations aside for this conversation, because I do think that it is important to talk about it without that looming over. Just know that it exists. I do think it's very weird that no one's talking about it, but that's just my opinion.
I read a few articles kind of discussing that, West Side Story's Ansel Elgort problem.
I know. It's strange. And because we don't have answers, we can't talk about it properly, so we're just not going to talk about it. Anyway, I saw West Side Story, I guess, like, 2 weeks ago now. And something that you had talked about in the last episode was specifically the orchestrations. And can confirm, the way that movie starts is stunning. Like, the orchestrations insane. Also, shout out to Spielberg for creating 1950s New York in 2019 New York, because it's crazy. And I remember listening to interviews with some of the cast, and then also listening to interviews with some of the cast of In the Heights, because if you guys can believe, these two movies filmed at basically the exact same time, like streets apart from each other.
Yeah.
And I think it was Mike Feist that was like, you know, you would turn the corner and you would see like Times Square, and then you would turn back and I'm now in the 1950s. So whoever did the sets, like incredible, incredible stuff. This movie is gorgeous to look at. It is so visually stunning. That's not my issue with the movie. Some of the performances, stunning, amazing. I just think, and I think because like I don't have the same pre-established connection to West Side Story that you do, it just didn't put me over the top like Tick, Tick, Boom did. I mean, we had seen the original movie West Side Story in 2020, early 2020. We had seen the 2020 West Side Story in 2019. And that being my first experience and exposure to West Side Story was obviously like vastly different from this movie.
Absolutely.
It was a street, like, I don't even know. You know, it rained on stage. We had injuries.
It was grimy.
Yeah, there was like cameras on stage. Like, it was crazy. So I think maybe seeing that version first and loving that and then seeing this like almost tainted that a bit too.
That's an unpopular opinion to love that version.
Totally. I'm like one of, I mean, you enjoyed it as well, but
I did. I think it was like 95% there for me. There's a 5% that's just like holding back on that version.
Totally. So I also think that like casting so many theater people was such a great move for Spielberg for this movie. And then I just think in terms of why it's not my favorite movie of the year is because I this is a me problem. I'm not as interested in like the Tony story. And I was really hoping with a brand new script, which shout out to Tony Kushner. I know that there's like lots of people criticizing. And again, we can't speak to because we are not part of the Latinx community. And obviously,
or specifically having, the Puerto Rican community.
Yeah, like the lack of Puerto Rican representation is obviously a problem. But what they did do from the original movie is a completely reimagined version and a story that should have been told 60 years ago. So I do think that the script and the rewrites of the script were amazing. I personally was just hoping for rewrites to be more of a Tony Maria love story and not so much a Tony story. And I know that I'm probably in the minority of that. And maybe that's me projecting, like, I don't care about Ansel Elgort onto the screen. But again, like, I think this movie is amazing. It's just not as good to me as my number one.
Oh, for sure. Like, this is like, we're getting up to our top two here. Like, it's very
close. Like, we're absolutely,
they're both the top two. And we just kind of like,
for the sake of nitpicking. Yeah.
No.
And something that I think is important to talk about, and we had said this, I think when I saw you last in person, these are two completely different movies that came out literally 2 weeks apart from each other.
Crazy different.
And the fact that
pulled together by Stephen Sondheim. Pulled together. Like, truly.
I know.
Truly.
And the fact that they came out so close together and are, I think, arguably, like, the best movies of this year. I'm not even talking movie musicals. I haven't seen that many movies this year, but I think they're up there with some of the best movies of the year. So
I'm thinking, yes, I mean, I'm thinking both will be nominated for Oscars this year, which will be exciting to have multiple musicals be on the Oscar stage this year. Okay, let me talk about West Side Story. Okay.
Yes.
So as you know, as everyone knows, like, I had before I ever saw it on stage, I had seen the movie version of West Side Story, the 1961 movie version. And for my, like, with my mom, and who loved this movie, and she always loved Natalie Wood in this role of Maria. And it's hard because Natalie Wood was a beautiful actress, but she is not Puerto Rican. She's not even Latinx in any way. She's literally Russian, putting on this Puerto Rican accent, and being, you know, bronzed with makeup in brown face for this role. And there's so much wonderful about that 1961 movie. Like number one being the preservation of Jerome Robbins' choreography on film. But there are some things that, and that you'll never be able to make a movie like you make a movie in 1961. You just can't recreate that ever again. But there are things that were harmful to communities that were in that movie, down to not just the casting, but, you know, kind of stereotypical portrayals of like Puerto Rican people. And do I think this new movie is perfect? No. I've read a lot and listened to a lot of people criticizing even still the representation in this movie, the casting in this movie. But when I tell you, just watching it, it was like, just like magic on screen. Just what Spielberg did, what Justin Peck did with this choreography, what Tony Kushner did with this script. This is a brand new script that took the bones, again, of that original 1957 Broadway production and added different, more motivations to characters. Like, the character of Tony has new backstory and new motivations. Like, he has a reason for why he's trying to leave the Jets, as opposed to just this arbitrary, he's, like, seen the light. The controversial take, but I loved what they did with the gun. I love that the gun is introduced so much earlier in the story, and is kind of seen, you know, there's a lot of discussion in modern times about guns in our society. We live in Canada, so it's a little bit of a different discussion, but guns in our society and people, kids who like don't know what to do with them and are kind of using them and harming people, and having access to a gun is so dangerous. And for the character of Riff, it was made very clear that these characters were very in over their heads with this gun, and to the use of the song Cool put earlier and used to kind of show this struggle over this gun was great. I love that Tony Maria had, like, it felt like more real interactions before they, like, got married, quote unquote, got married.
The story's crazy. It's like, it's Romeo and Juliet for anyone that doesn't know, but, like, the story's crazy.
It's absolutely crazy. Along with you, I've seen that 1961 movie. I saw the 2020 Broadway production. I've also saw the 2009 Broadway production, and now I've seen this 2020 movie. And I just, it was just absolutely magical. The dancing, the singing, the performances. There are chunks of this movie that are just like they're just like soaring. Like that first half specifically, it just flies. And it was just magical. It was a magical experience. I absolutely loved it.
I mean, we have refrained from saying any names here because we do have a best performance category. So we will save that. But just one more thought on West Side Story. The cinematography is ridiculous.
Yeah, the cinematography by Janusz Kaminski. The way they film New York City, they like love that city. But they're also showing the realities that these gangs, these people who were, they were being pushed out of their homes, were living with. And it, like, really amazing cinematography. Just, I, so, so much was right with this movie. And again, I'm not part of the groups or the communities that have issues with it. So, like, I cannot speak to that, but I can speak to that I love this movie.
Okay, talk about your number one. We don't really need to hear my full thoughts on this because you heard my love affair with Tick, Tick, Boom on our Tick, Tick, Boom episode. I will say, and I don't think this has happened in a long time, it's very rare that the most anticipated anything for me turns out to be that good. This was the movie musical. As soon as the trailer dropped, I was like, this is everything. And it was. It is my favorite movie musical, I think, to come out in general. And wow. I think, as I said, not only is it the movie musical of the year for me, it is, at this moment, the movie of the year for me. I think the performances are so stellar. It is like unmatched what was on that screen. I think there's something also so beautiful about like stripped back. I know this movie cost millions to make, but in terms of like comparing it straight to West Side Story, it doesn't feel like the budget was as big as the West Side budget, which again is so interesting. It's also dealing with like
downtown theater too.
It's so interesting that three movies on this list are all kind of love letters to New York City, you know, In the Heights, Tick, Tick, Boom, West Side Story. So
In the Heights is so interesting because it would not exist without West Side Story. Like the lines from it are like direct.
But again, let's bring it all back. None of these would exist without Stephen Sondheim. So yes. It's so interesting. I just think like what you said about Tick, Tick, Boom and the way that Lynn brought this story to life, and I've watched so many interviews now with the cast. They truly seem like such a family. It was such a tight unit. This was a movie that they put their heart and soul into, and I have watched it again. I will watch scenes of it again. I truly think it is a perfect movie, and I just love it so much. It was such a surprise, and how like emotionally attached I got to it by the end. And you know, the Jonathan Larson story in general. I mean, I sent you that interview today. I didn't know that Julie was in the audience for that final scene.
I saw her.
No.
I saw her. Me watching with my parents. Okay, that's this person. Okay, that's this person. That's Julie Larson. That's Jelani Aladdin.
Yes. We forgot about Jelani. We also forgot that Janine was in the composer scene. So I just think that that movie for me was such a
who worked on West Side Story.
Yeah, vocal coach extraordinaire, apparently. I just love that Tick, Tick, Boom was such a love letter to musical theater, and I feel like it was exactly what we needed this year, and probably last year too, but to think about the last 2 years in general, it was a movie that made me feel so much, and I wasn't expecting it, and I just love it. So, yeah. Again, 1 and 2, so hard. The rest, really easy for
us. We're basically on the same page. We're basically on the same page here. Like, yeah. I love these top two movies. Yeah. I will watch them again and again and again.
Okay, let's get into it. Performances. Who's your top three?
Your top three. Okay.
I also have an honorable mention, but we'll start with the top three.
Top three. My number three, Miss Daphne Rubin-Vega stealing the show in the Heights.
Oh my God. Absolutely. I like forgot about that performance.
Nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. Gave us life.
She's never sounded better.
No, she sounded so good. I mean, she was in Tick, Tick, Boom for a little bit too.
Yeah. But really, like the vocal performance she gave in the Heights is.
Yeah, she was so good in that movie. I thought her character was amazing.
Wow.
So Daphne Vega in the Heights, my number three.
Okay, my number three. Her film debut, Rachel Zegler.
Wow, Rachel. Okay, Maria. I did all three different movies here. I did three different movies.
I did not do three different movies. Rachel Zegler is how old? 20?
I think she's 20 now. I think she was like just 18 filming this movie.
I can't think. I mean, we haven't seen anybody else do it, but I can't think of anyone better to play Maria. She was a star on screen. Also, drop dead gorgeous in this movie. Her voice. I've watched a billion Rachel Zegler YouTube videos. I've watched the Shrek vlog many, many times. I've watched all of her covers. She has never sounded better than she did in this movie.
She sounded really great. So credit to Janine Tesori.
Well, she credits Janine on that. She says she worked really extensively with Janine to sing those songs. Her voice is so crystal clear and so beautiful. The soprano like aspects of Maria, like I loved everything about her. Okay, you're number two.
My number two, an icon. Speaking of West Side Story. Give me Mike Feist in West Side Story.
My number two also.
Absolute icon. Absolutely unhinged in this movie. I'm obsessed. I watched this movie with my mom. I watched West Side Story with my mom. We went to a screening. And number one, after it was over, she turned to me. I was like nervous because she had loved that original movie. And she turned to me and she's like, that was excellent. And I was like, oh, thank God. I would have been like sad if she didn't like it. And then we're like waiting to leave because they took our cell phones. There was like a line to get our cell phones. So we're just like waiting. And she's like, you know who was the best person in this movie? And I'm like, who? She's like, Riff. And I'm like, oh my God. Yes, he was. He just, every acting choice, the dancing. Let's talk about that dancing.
Oh my God. Let's talk about. Sorry. Mike and Paloma though.
Going crazy. In my dreams, Mike and Paloma and David Alvarez and Ariana DeBose like perform at the Oscars, like dancing though. I don't need to hear them sing. I just want to see them dance.
To dance in the gym. That's what we need.
That's what I want. Maybe the entire ensemble. Bring everyone out. Bring every single person out and dance. He just was crazy in this movie, in the best way. I think he is a little bit typecast as like troubled teens at the moment. Even though I think he's like around our age, so like truly beyond teenage years. But yeah, his performance was the most electric in this entire movie. He just had something that was like magnetic on screen. So good. Yeah,
I definitely agree. Also my number two, I think it's so interesting to cast Mike in general because at the time, I mean, Dear Evan Hansen, obviously a smash hit. He played Connor for years in the original Broadway cast, mm-hmm. but like still kind of an unknown when you think about
it. He was Tony
casting.
Nominated for that. Never forget.
Yes. But just like thinking like he's unknown to the film world and mm-hmm. he's a very private person, not on social media. So it's like really stepping out to cast this person. And, you know, you and I have read many an interview now with Mike and listened to him speak mm-hmm. about how he got in the zone for this role. We've talked about that scene in the bar with the gun, how he all himself put the gun to his head, stood up to have the gun to his head. So mm-hmm. he really took chances with this.
That was the
riff.
Moment I'm like, he's lost his mind and I'm obsessed.
Well, I mean, I also watched Mike Feist in a very failed Amazon Prime show this year, Panic. But I just think he's a really good actor and
he's great.
It will be interesting when award season comes around. We do have Golden Globe nominations out. Mike not nominated. Rachel nominated. And Ariana DeBose nominated.
I can see this performance like being overlooked.
Sad.
I don't see it getting like the big awards attention, but it's getting my attention. It's getting my love.
I don't think it's just us. I think there are people that are watching this movie for the first time and they're like, who is Riff?
I love to listen to a good podcast. And all the time, my podcast hosts that I'm listening to are like, you know who's eating in this movie? Mike Feist. Sorry, shout out to Ira and on Keep It.
It's true. I think like the podcast world, the critics seem to also love his performance because like what's not to love? He literally put it all out there. I know that Mike is like kind of on the fence of should he be an actor going forward? And I'm here to tell you that you should be an actor going forward.
But like pick your roles, like only pick things that you really want to do because that's how you, for me, like that's how he'll maintain his specialness, you know, picking things that he can, like, bite into.
I mean, this was a guy that Spielberg said he was about to delay the West Side Story production for. So, obviously, he saw something in Mike, too.
I listened to an interview with him not too long ago. It was on the Little Gold Men podcast that Vanity Fair puts out about, like, award season. They had Mike on the podcast. So, they're campaigning him.
Yes.
And they were like, he was said he was really nervous about the dancing in this movie. He's like, everyone's
he's
like,
newsie.
But you were in
he's
Newsies.
Kind of in
that's
bag.
What he's like, everyone's like, but you were in Newsies. He's like, I pushed sets in Newsies. He's like, I pushed sets and I understudied Jeremy Jordan. I did not dance that much.
And Jeremy has said in many an interview that like he didn't have to dance for that audition. So you're right.
He's like, I pushed sets. But I do think he like as a child started as a dancer. And then that's like that end of performing is what brought him to acting. And I think he considers himself more of an actor than of a dancer. But dancing is a nice like thing in his back pocket. And he said he hadn't danced in years when he did this movie. And watching it, I'm just like,
I know.
You can't tell.
And
you look amazing.
Listening to him speak on it, he's like, my body was broken.
He's so like long.
So
in this
long
movie.
And lanky.
Like,
and his lines when he's dancing are so long and beautiful. I mean, we talk about Dance at the Gym, but Cool, his lines in Cool, damn. So
yeah, absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, love
number
him.
One.
Okay, number one. I think
we
have the same number
one. We have
the
one. Same. Yeah.
Mr. Jonathan Larson himself, Andrew Garfield, he did that. Like
it's a transformative performance. It really is.
Sometimes when I'm like talking about this movie, when I'm talking about Andrew Garfield, when talking about this movie, I'm like calling him Jonathan in my mind because he just like he became Jonathan in this movie. He's another one who just kind of like throws his whole self into performing, into roles. And I think he just really connected with the role of Jonathan Larson, and with that hairstyle. And I, like, he sounded great singing. We talked so much about his performance in this, but he sounded great singing, and he just was Jonathan for that 2 hours, and he was great.
I mean, since recording our Tick Tick Boom episode, I did learn that his mom passed away in 2019 and very close to them starting production. And in a couple interviews, he said that not only was Jonathan with him the entire movie, but also his mom. And that was something that was really important to him. And then to finish the movie was almost his like final goodbye to his mother, which is so devastating. But I do think that like placing someone that you care so deeply for, like into those scenes, like you could tell how much he was like, as you said, like putting himself into that movie. I love everything he does. I really do. And if there is going to be truly an Oscar nomination this year for acting, it will be Andrew.
I think he's going to get it. I think he's going to get it. I don't know if he's going to win, but I think he's going to get that nomination.
And I think that he deserves to be there. This is mm-hmm. the best thing I've seen him do. I think for himself, he has said in many interviews, this is the best role that he has played. And I can't say anything negative about it. Like, I'm obsessed with him in this movie.
So good. Should we talk about the Demois rumor?
Yes. Of
the alleged, Merrily We Roll Along. They're saying Broadway, but originally I'd heard not Broadway, unknown. Again, it's on Demois, so is it trustworthy?
Sometimes.
We'll find out. Andrew Garfield, Danny Radcliffe, Merrily We Roll Along. Crazy.
I'm buying tickets whenever that's
crazy
announced.
If that would happen. Crazy. That would be exciting.
What a way to sell out a theater in literally 5 seconds. And also the roaring applause that would be in that theater would be
Spider-Man and experience. Harry Potter doing a Broadway musical.
You couldn't ask for more, truly. I do have two honorable mentions, both from Tick, Tick, Boom. And we shouted them out on our Tick, Tick, Boom episode, but they deserve another credit. Robin DeJesus and Vanessa Hudgens. And I will say, Robin DeJesus had an honorable mention on our last year in review for his performance in Boys in the Band. So, for me.
He's so good in everything he does. He is so good in everything he does.
So good.
He's another one who's just like a magnetic performer.
And I think that you had discussed this on our Tick, Tick, Boom episode, but anyone that hasn't seen the like 3 rounds of drinks with him and Andrew, go watch it. It's everything. Vanessa surprises us all the time. We should stop being surprised because she is that good.
Yeah, she has such a distinct voice and it worked so well in this. And also she looked amazing. Oh, the 90s outfits and hair suited her so well.
Amazing. Okay, moving on to our favorite musical number.
Okay, I'll start us off. These are pretty standard, pretty great. Like, I don't think we're going to run into any surprises here from me. Number mm-hmm. 3, In the Heights from In the Heights.
That me too!
I think we're going to have the exact same list.
I don't know, but probably.
Okay, this was number 3, like, crazy, amazing. This was like the peak of In the Heights.
When unfortunately, it was song 1.
Exactly. When that happened, when that was over, I was like, this movie is iconic. And then nothing, like when you have such an amazing thing to start off your movie, nothing can live up to it. The choreography, the street, the just everything working all together was so good. That Alice Brooks did that. Alice Brooks was like, that was that cinematography, amazing. I loved it. My number 3. So good, so good.
Also, we'll say that the In the Heights soundtrack, really good. And that song specifically, really good on the soundtrack. No surprise, because it was amazing in the movie. But yeah, that was the... We were texting each other during that screening and were shocked at how amazing that opening number was. And then they had put out the 8-minute opening number on YouTube and everyone was like really excited. And then I feel like we were all, as you said, let down by this movie. But that was the magic moment. And
other people were not, just us.
I mean, I feel like some people were disappointed by In the Heights, but I do think that like the magic was captured in the opening number and we lost it for the rest of the movie and never gained it back, sadly. But that opening number lives on, so I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Okay, number 2.
Number 2, Sunday from Tick, Tick, Boom. Sunday.
Also my number 2.
That's what I'm saying, girl. That's what I'm saying.
Burn
it
dead.
It was wonderful. It was just wonderful. I saw a clip earlier today on TikTok, like just before we started recording, of Lin. Someone was filming Lin directing.
Lin is putting all of these out on his Twitter. Go follow him on Twitter. Yes. He's tweeting all the behind the scenes. And Sunday was most recently put out. Yes.
But it was a clip of him directing Daphne, was it Adam Pascal, and who
plays
Wilson
Jermaine. Yes.
Yes, I believe it's Wilson Jermaine Heredia. And I didn't realize, but there were things that referenced their kind of most famous roles, like most obviously Beth Malone in like full Allison.
Yeah.
But they had them doing that like shoulder Levy Boehm thing in that scene that I didn't notice watching the movie. I don't even know if it made it, but like every little every moment of that number was so well thought out and so like perfectly constructed. And it was like such a musical fantasy sequence. It was stunning. It was beautiful. I loved it so much.
Yeah. Definitely agree. Loved everything about that. Something interesting about the Lin tweets is he had put out a photo of like a piece of paper and all of the little names of the people that were going to be on there. I love that he calls him Stokes too, because like what else are we going to call Brian Stokes Mitchell but Stokes? But in the Netflix cast party interview that came out like literally a couple days ago, Vanessa Hudgens talks about this scene specifically, and when Andrew puts up his arms and the door of the diner comes down, she was like, that brought me back to seeing my first musical and falling in love with musicals, that magical realism that you immerse yourself in, you fall in love with. And I totally agree. That was a moment that was so for the musical theater fans. And I mean, Sunday is Sunday. Such a stunning song.
And then referencing Sondheim's work.
I know, it means so much more now. It just does. So, yeah, it's...
To think that Sondheim got to, like, see that movie.
I know.
I'm gonna cry. I need tissues. Okay, number one. If you have a different number one, I don't know what it would possibly be.
I think we might.
Than me. I have the exact same list. Number one, Dance at the Gym from West Side Story. Like... okay, where is Dance at the Gym? That was the greatest piece of cinematic... anything put on screen this year. Better than Dance at the Gym?
I loved Dance at the Gym. We talked about it. I think the dancing is ridiculous. I also think the dancing in America is ridiculous.
Yes.
But for me, the West Side Story musical moment is the Tonight balcony scene. It is so stunning to me.
I know we hate Ansel, but I almost like agree. Yeah. Like when he like pulls himself over the balcony... lost my mind.
Okay, talk about Dance at the Gym. I'll talk about balcony in a minute. For it.
Okay, so the Dance at the Gym, it's just straight choreo. Like, for me, every time I've ever seen West Side Story, it is Dance at the Gym. It is the magical moment. And, like, going back to seeing Romeo and Juliet, when Romeo and Juliet see each other for the first time, like, every version of this I've ever seen, I get chills. Mm-hmm. Like... you know, talking about Sondheim, let's talk about Shakespeare, okay? Let's talk about Shakespeare. And so you have this kind of dance battle, but it's like mambo. And they're going so fast, they're going so crazy. And Justin Peck, and I want to specifically shout out in this moment, Patricia Delgado, who was the associate choreographer with Justin Peck on this movie. Because she is Cuban and she brought like the Latinx influences to this movie. And I think like we can credit her with a lot of the authentic movement that is coming into the Sharks, even though they're Puerto Rican and she is Cuban, that kind of Latinx style, that Latin style that is brought in, I think is so important to have. And like sometimes when David Alvarez and Ariana DeBose were dancing together, and he was just like spinning her and he was like doing tours because, you know, he's a trained ballet dancer. It was so exciting. And then when they came around and saw each other behind the bleachers and you see just like whispers of dancing through the bleachers. Gorgeous, gorgeous.
That
and then when they come back
dance
out,
that they do behind with like the snapping.
I love it so much. So yeah, Dance at the Gym, number one for me. Okay, talk about.
So I had said to you that like from Dance at the Gym all the way to the balcony scene is a perfect sequence of West Side Story. You cannot get a better sequence if you tried acting, singing, cinematography, literally everything. It is 100% perfect. I just think we had seen like 20 seconds of a Tonight Balcony scene clip released on Twitter before West Side Story was released in theaters. The sparkle in Rachel's eye as she is looking at Ansel through the caged staircase, like, that is love. Like, I am obsessed with how young she feels in that moment, and it's like showing that feeling of a crush. And then when he comes back and they sing goodnight, I also think she sounds the best she's ever sounded on Tonight Balcony scene specifically. I also think he sounds good on that song. And I don't think that he sounds like, he's not a great singer, but he's sounding good on that song.
He's a
pretty good singer.
He's a fine singer. He's a serviceable, fine singer. Yeah, I saw an interview where they were saying they were on this like fire escape and they told him, you can't climb up. You can only go this high.
Yeah.
And then he like ignored them and just like, you know, clambered over. So when, you know, Maria, when Rachel like jumps back a little bit, she's like surprised that he's like come so close.
Yeah. It just felt like such a real like, romantic moment.
Like youthful, like teenage.
Yeah. And it also reminded me again, like we've said this before, but you know, Isaac Powell, my Tony, will always be like the definitive Tony.
Yeah,
and just
absolutely.
Thinking about like their Tonight Balcony scene and how in love like Isaac and Shireen were, and I feel like mm-hmm. Ansel brought some of that like excitement that Isaac had, and that's why I loved it. It was such a like stripped back simple moment, and I feel like that's why I loved it so much. But everything was, again, like that whole scene was so well choreographed as well. It was movement that was choreographed, him jumping from like staircase to staircase, obviously a choreographed moment. And then just like the simple goodnight and her like going back into her room and going back to her everyday life. Like, I love it so much.
I mean, look, for my favorite musical number, it requires more choreo. And I needed intense mambo.
I mean, musical number off. Doesn't always have to be dance.
Okay, but for me, the mambo off was necessary.
Mambo! I will say, I meant to mention in my favorite musical number is an honorable mention. Material Girl, Cinderella.
Material world. Sorry. Actually, like, all of my honorable mentions could be Cinderella. What's the finale one?
Let's get loud.
Oh, right, Let's Get Loud, Rhythm Nation. We are a pot.
It's true.
We are
You know what?
Pot.
Choreography, not bad in Cinderella.
No, you know, we're forgetting our actual favorite musical number. Am I wrong?
I didn't forget about it. I just chose not to say.
No, you forgot it.
Okay, we are nearing the end of this episode. If you have stuck through all the way, thank you so much for staying with us. This is like my favorite episode to record, though, because we just get to like freak out over the things that
it's
we love
just,
all year.
This is what our actual conversations sound like in real life. The conversations that inspired the creation of this podcast. Yeah. So this is like authentic Tara.
You're getting
and Steph.
A glimpse of it. Normally it's like 4 to 5 hours. We will stay on here like after we record and then continue to talk about things that like we probably just mentioned on an episode but still feel the need to discuss further. So welcome to our brains. But that leads me to our not final category, our second last category, which is our favorite moment of the year.
We got to have our first repeat guest on the podcast. We talked about it, getting Brandon on. Honestly, like, you know, he's a guest of the podcast, but he's also just like a kind of a friend now. Always, like, always so excited to see his work and getting to see him in Blackout, something we'd seen him perform almost a year plus, like 2 years. I don't even know how much earlier it had been, almost 2 years earlier. And getting to have him on and just getting to hang out with him again. Truly one of the coolest. Our friend of the podcast, but like an actual, you know, kind of our friend, Brandon, and having him on was one of my favorite moments of the year.
My next favorite moment, we watched High School Musical, the musical, the series this year, season 2. And although I don't think this season was very good, it did give us maybe the greatest moment of 2021. Devastating, but the breakup of Nene and Ricky, but also simultaneously the breakup of Olivia and Josh. And the way that we cried watching this, the way that we've watched it again and cried again, I feel like I've teared up every single time I've seen this scene.
I think we've watched that specific scene maybe 20 times.
Yeah.
And that's conservative. That's a conservative estimate.
And that's not even counting TikTok, because I've watched it many times on TikTok.
Yeah, exactly.
But I just
We watched it 3 days ago.
Yeah. I will watch that show until that show is no more, no matter how good or bad it is. But I really think that this has also been the year of Miss Olivia Rodrigo. And to see that moment on stage, or on stage, on screen, and like experience it together was like my favorite thing.
Yes. You know, again, a glimpse into our friendship. There was a time this year we had Wednesday night watch parties. We would watch High School Musical.
I mean, don't expose my number one favorite moment of the year.
Oh, sorry. Okay, then I'll do my number one first, and then we'll get to our number one. My number one is when we threw each other birthday parties this year.
A guy has curly hair.
Dear Evan Hansen, quack, 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 quack. Somebody force me to care. Somebody let me come through.
Phantom prequel.
Oh, Love Never Dies.
That's a sequel. Wait, it's a sequel. Never mind.
It's a sequel, Tara.
Sorry.
When I am watching one of these medleys and Emilio Estefan comes out and it's not Josh Segarra, you better believe I'm clicking away. One shout out to Shara for like the actual like legwork of planning these birthday parties and planning the drinks and planning the games and doing all that. But just like episodes where we just got to like celebrate each other and like make fun of each other and like just show each other how much we loved each other. Truly the best this year. Truly the best.
I mean, the true greatest moment of the year was during your birthday when you removed your tiara at the exact same time the wig was removed for Losing My Mind. Like, that was...
Yeah, that no was... Delay. I watched that recently. I watched it the other day myself.
You were delayed and still managed to get it on the exact moment. It was pretty impressive.
It's my calling.
My favorite moment of this year is, we've mentioned it on many episodes because if you can believe, this started as early as our Greatest Showman episode. We watched The Greatest Showman together. We watched Everybody's Talking About Jamie together. We watched most recently Diana together on
Shout out to Scener.
Yeah. I just loved like our Wednesday night watch parties of High School Musical, The Musical, The Series, Love Victor, and also Disney Fairy Tale Weddings. But it was just like something to look forward to when like things were still kind of like concerning and confusing in the middle of this pandemic. And it was a way to connect virtually and also like do the thing that we love. And I miss those watch parties. And I was like, we need to start a new series.
We need to find a new show. We need to find a new show.
I know. But yeah, we watched so many of those movie musicals that we did episodes on together. And I wouldn't have it any other way because
Mamma Mia.
Yeah. Not through Scener, unfortunately. But we did watch that on cable.
The second one we watched on Scener.
Oh, you're right. The first one we watched on cable at the same time. But normally we would be together in person to watch these things before we record an episode. And it felt no different, which was amazing. So, like, shout out to Scener for being that website this year. Yes, we also watched, like, Bridgerton on Scener at one point. So... lots of good stuff on there. It's got like Amazon, Netflix.
We watched many things on
YouTube.
Scener.
When we discovered that YouTube could be watched on Scener, we watched I'm Here every single Wednesday.
We used to watch that so much. Oh, we need to find a new show so we can watch I'm Here again.
Yeah.
We need to have a reason to be on there. It's honestly so true. Hopefully people listening know that we're like actual like best friends and like...
We don't just
they don't know by now,
80
episodes later. But, you know, it's been hard to be apart from our friends and be socially distanced and responsible, and I'm happy to do it. But also the little bits that we've been able to recapture watching movies and TV together or even recording the podcast and like hanging out after has been like very special these past 2 years.
Yeah, I agree. It's been great. No tears on this episode. We saved those for last one. Before we wrap this episode up, we did want to end on a good note. As we mentioned, you know, it's kind of like a really strange time to end the end of the year with all of these COVID cancellations and kind of like unknowns of what could happen to the theater community. But to keep it positive and to manifest some shows to see for 2022, what are you most excited to see next year?
Okay, I have a list of, it's technically six things, but two
just
of them go together.
It. All
two of them go together. Okay, so I want to get to New York again next year. And so the two shows that are like on my list there are A Strange Loop, which we just learned is going to Broadway, and Company, which is still there, which I feel like I've been talking about since it was on the West End. Like back in 2018, I've been like thinking about seeing the show, and we almost got there in 2020 and then we didn't.
Yeah.
And I got to see it. We got to go. Other things in Toronto and Juliet. And then we want a road trip to The Notebook, obviously. And finally, kind of the first thing hopefully we'll get to see is Boy Falls from the Sky, past guest of the podcast, Jake Epstein. We've talked to him about Boy Falls from the Sky, and it's been delayed time and time again. And it looks like it's going to happen in January. Fingers crossed. But I am like truly so excited to get to see him perform that.
Yeah, I mean, all of those are obviously on my list. So excited for the Strange Loop, A Strange Loop transfer opening in the Lyceum in spring. I think it will be, talk about a wake-up call for some critics. Can't wait for that moment to happen. So excited about that. Obviously, Company we've wanted to see. I'm so excited for Anne Juliet. I mean, if we're going to get back to New York, I obviously want to see Six again. It's been so long, and
yeah,
we love that.
I mean, that's musical. A given. That is a given.
Yeah. But it is funny because listening back to our year review last year, you know, we talked about something that we were so sad to miss, which was The Notebook. And we had said that we never had a conversation about it. We just knew in both of our minds that we were going.
Yeah.
And I think it's so funny because, like, same sort of mentality. I said to you when we were, like, on the subway to Come From Away that I was looking for tickets to The Notebook, and you're like, oh yeah, I keep up periodically, like checking tickets on that website. So again, we never discussed that we're going, but like, That one's actually kind of soon. I hope that things are like okay, because it's
hard being up here in Canada.
I know.
Like, I love Canada. I appreciate us, but it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah. It's also hard because you don't want to like road trip somewhere and then a show gets canceled because of a breakthrough COVID case.
It's so true.
It is difficult, but I do hope that 2022 theater is more, we will see more than we saw this year. That is my main hope.
I think we will.
We've already been inside of a theater a few times in 2021, so I'm hoping that we are back to a semi-regular scheduled programming next year for the podcast, because it's been tough. It's been tough to create content, and I think that, you know, 47 episodes virtually is a big accomplishment. It also comes with a lot of challenges, and I'm super proud of all of the work that we've created. I'm always proud of the work that we create, and I can't wait to talk to more people next year and see more shows and continue on some of the series that we've created. So before we truly, truly wrap this up, thank you again for sticking with us for this very long episode. But we are taking a break again in January, as we did last year. But guess what? When we come back, our way too early Tony nomination predictions for the 2022 Tony Awards are happening. We have not done one of these since 2020.
It'll be two years.
And some of those shows were awarded Tony Awards. But
some of them are going to be in this episode again.
Yes, and we will talk about those performances again. I'm so excited to talk about all of the performances. There are so many amazing shows on Broadway this year. So I can't wait to talk about all of that. But to close this episode out, just thank you so much for listening to us over the last, as we said, 3 years. This is the end of the third year of this podcast. So whether you like a tweet, subscribe to our YouTube channel, like an Instagram post, or, you know, subscribe to our podcast, like, we appreciate everything. So thank you so much for always listening to us.
This has been one of the greatest joys of the past 3 years. And particularly these past 2 years, where there has not been a lot to hold on to, this podcast has been here for us. So from me too, thank you so much for listening. You can subscribe to our podcast anywhere podcasts are found, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify. And we would also love it if you subscribed on YouTube, where you can see our lovely faces, and leave us a comment there.
And you can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Off to B-Way Podcast with the number 2. Happy New Year, and
yes,
see you next year.
See you in 2022.